It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, some health insurance companies are rejecting more and more claims. A health journalist tells us what's behind that trend and what to do when your health insurance claim is rejected. Now, are you planning to hit the road this summer? We want to know where you're heading. Road trips, big and small, are a big American tradition, and with Memorial Day weekend just around the corner, we're inviting you to share your plans or your memories or your annual road trip plans with your family or friends or on your own. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. What is the best summer road trip you've ever taken? Do you have a favorite road trip memory you'd like to share with us? Do you have plans for something maybe this weekend or over the summer here in Wisconsin or beyond? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Getting some family or friends together, getting behind the wheel can be a great experience that results in some of our most interesting stories and fondest memories, whether it's a few weeks, a few days, or just a few hours. Tell us about your favorite road experience. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We asked around WPR here, heard from some of our colleagues. Evan Casey, a Milwaukee-based reporter, says, "My dad, Tom, passed away late last year, but one of our favorite activities to do every summer was to take a road trip together. 2 years ago, we drove to North Carolina to spend time with some family. On the way, we stopped in Louisville to tour the Louisville Slugger Museum and to go see a AAA baseball game. We also stopped at a Waffle House on a random exit somewhere in Kentucky, a lifelong dream of my dad's at that point." Evan says the food was not great, much to his chagrin. And Evan says during the drive, we listened to the Highwaymen and Johnny Cash, but it also made him listen to my favorite podcasts. This year, Evan plans to take a solo road trip to Cooperstown, New York to see the National Baseball Hall of Fame, trip he would have made with his dad this year. How about you? You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your road trip plans, 800-642-1234. Oh, good. Looks like we have a little hiccup in our phone system, so please be patient or keep trying. I see some of you have had to come and go lately. You could join in now. I think we're getting that straightened out. 800-642-1234 is the number. We want to hear about your road trips, past or present. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Also here at WPR, Emily Ralph, a radio operations manager here at WPR, says, "I grew up in Florida, and much of my dad's family is in the Rhinelander area. Every summer and most winters, we would make the two-day drive, my dad, my sister, and me." Emily says, "I still get nostalgic for those times. I remember in the Tennessee or Kentucky area, there was some strawberry soda. That was amazing. I haven't had it in decades, but I still think of it." Do you have a memory like that from your childhood, maybe a family road trip you did every year, something that you do with your family now, maybe something you replicate, or if you've got plans in the works? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. All right, I think we're making contact with callers now. That's good news. We call these caller onlys. We hope to be able to talk to callers. Now, when I first moved to Wisconsin, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have a job. Well, I had a job lined up, hadn't started it yet, hadn't started classes yet. Nothing to do but road trips. I'd looked at these places that sounded cool on the map. My first full day in the state, this place called Natural Bridge State Park. Well, sounds pretty cool. I had the road atlas, drove over, toured around Natural Bridge State Park. It is pretty cool. I've been back there since. And then on the way back, I saw signs for the state championship cow chip throw contest in Sauk City, Prairie du Sac, the big park there. All right. When in Wisconsin, I stopped there, and it was really impressive. I saw the state record broken at the time, and the winner, of course, was headed to the national championships in Beaver, Oklahoma. So it was not a big road trip, just the course of a day, but it was a good one. All right, now we're getting some calls, and we're talking to our callers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Mark starts us off in Bloomer. So thanks for sticking it out there, Mark. What do you want to tell us about?
So two things. This summer, my son's going to earn his bicycle merit badge for Scouts, so we're going to be biking all summer. And number two, I turned 50 this year, so we're going to Cedar Point Roller Coaster Park in Ohio. Enjoy your life in your youth while you got it? It goes back.
Yeah, I went to Cedar Point as a kid coming down there from Michigan. Where is the biking going to happen, Mark?
All over Wisconsin and Minnesota, all kinds of different trails.
All right. Well, happy birthday and congrats on the on your kid's badge there. Thanks a lot for starting us off at 800-642-1234. Kate joins us now in Glendale. Kate, hello.
Hi. We're going in July. My husband and I are taking a trip that we've been trying to do for 3 years now. We're going to take an Amtrak out to Seattle.
Ooh.
We'll have a bedroom on the train, and then we're going up to Alaska, and we're taking the Inside Passage ferry.
Wow!
And we'll have a cabin on that, and that'll take we're going to be gone for a total of 3 weeks.
Wow! Have you taken a long train trip like that before, Kate, or is this your first big one that you've been working up to?
Well, I did go when I was very young. I took a long train trip to California to visit my uncle. However, this is really the first long trip since then. And we just wanted to do it in, you know, a way that would be very relaxing. And it'll get us there in a couple of days. And then the Inside Passage Ferry, I did take that in 1982 when I visited a friend who lived in Ketchikan. But this is a time we're going to go from Bellingham, Washington, all the way up to Haines and stay there for 6 days because that's how long it'll take the boat to get back.
Fantastic, Kate. Well, happy travels. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We are asking for your favorite road trip memories or the road trip you have, and you can define it however you want. It's a one-day car tour or a multi-week train and boat tour. You name it. Love to hear your stories and plans at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ben is with us now on his way to Ironwood, Michigan. Ben, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about? What's your trip?
Last summer, I drove on my way to Charleston, South Carolina. I stopped in Charleston, West Virginia, which was my 50th state. So I road tripped them all.
Wow. Okay. Is this something you set out to do? Or did you realize, wow, I've been to most of the states already. I might as well just round up?
I was taught growing up, we were the minivan family. We drove to Florida to visit my grandma every winter break and drove to Colorado to visit my aunt to go skiing every spring break.
Wow. And now do you do these trips solo now, or is there family or friends involved on this South Carolina via West Virginia trip?
We travel as a pack. It's my wife and our husky.
Excellent. Oh, that's wonderful. And did you see now you got the Monongahela Forest there in West Virginia? Did you see some of the good sights?
You know, it was a bit of a pass through. I did go to the Capitol, which is being from Madison, stopping at state capitals is always really fun. So that's another part of the things that I do. And my wife and I started getting into going to see the gardens. And another really cool one that I'd tell anybody to do is we did Niagara Falls and Toronto and then went to Montreal. So we went to the East Coast and went sailing in Maine and drove all the way back home. So
Fantastic.
The car is really our home.
Awesome. Ben, thanks for sharing that. 50 states plus a couple provinces along the way. We are taking your calls with your favorite road trip memories or your road trip plans for this year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Judith Heisey, our WPR digital marketing manager, shared this with us. She says, as a child of a long-haul truck driver, road trips mean eating at the truck stops that your dad already knows he likes and stopping at the places your dad has driven by but wants to check out further. Also means most of the road time is during the night or wee hours of the morning between dad's usual sleep times. It also means you really got to mean it if you have to go to the bathroom. I remember, Judith says, my mom telling my dad while we were hammering down the interstate, they're just little children, they need to stop. But he was not a tyrant and nothing but good memories of Mount Rushmore and Flintstone Land and the Grand Tetons, Yellowstone National Park, and a grasshopper plague in Denver that meant the hotel pool was clogged with bugs. It also means, Judith says, when I helped a friend move to Seattle, my dad told us which of the Flying J truck stops were not to be missed. Now you can share your stories, your favorite road trip memories, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Here's some more of your stories and some more from here at WPR coming up on Central Time.
I've been over there, hey, smelled that dairy air, hey, once up by Eau Claire, hey, thought I saw a bear, hey, I had a creep up at State Fair, hey, I've been over there. I've been to Edgerton, Darlington, Middleton, Hubbleton, Hub City, Cuba City, Genoa City, Ashburn, Ashland, Packwalk.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We want to know where you have been or where you're going. We're taking your calls about the best road trips you've ever taken, your favorite road trip memories, your plans for hitting the road this summer, your favorite places to go in Wisconsin or the rest of the world. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite childhood memory of a family road trip, an annual trip you took with your family, or maybe one you do every year now, or maybe a brand new thing you're planning for this very summer? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go back to your calls now. Jackie is with us in Milwaukee. Jackie, what's your story?
My family and I, so mom, dad, my sister, my brother, and I, we would drive either the pickup truck or the station wagon, pull in the trailer, and we'd go to Florida every winter. We'd do the Everglades and all the little road trips, the little side displays they would have. But another thing I wanted to comment on was that I've read so much how the younger people don't drive as often because of the cost. And
oh, I think we lost you there, Jack. Oh, I think we lost you there, Jackie. Yeah, but we got your story. Thanks. Sounds like great memories of those childhood road trips. It reminds me of Lee Rayburn, a producer for Central Time, says years before the first National Lampoon's Vacation movie, my dad decided to pack wife, two kids, niece, mother, elderly aunt, all into a brand new station wagon to make the trek to Disney World again. Didn't get very far before the seven of us realized the air conditioner didn't work. The back of the station wagon had a fold-out seat facing the rear window that rolled down, so my sister, my cousin, and I stayed cool by breathing in the car exhaust. Lee says not long after that, the engine overheated, ended up stranded at the mercy of the nearest auto mechanic. Like Wally World in the movie, Disney World was open by the time we finally arrived. Back to your calls now. Jordan is with us in Anago. Jordan, hi.
Hi there.
What's your road trip you want to tell us about?
So I would love to shamelessly plug my former employer, Salador County, out of Sister Bay, Wisconsin. Ooh. They offer absolutely beautiful two-hour scenic sailing cruises. Their pride and joy is a 67-foot wooden sailboat that sailed around the world twice. The drive up through Door County is beautiful, you know, winding roads up through the bluffs and down by the shore, and then getting to spend 2 hours on the deck of a gorgeous boat looking out over the water is just priceless.
Now, you said your former employer, so do you used to actually sail these boats?
That is correct. I was the deckhand on the schooner Edith M. Becker.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. That sounds like a lot of great views there, I bet. Thanks for sharing that with us, Jordan. We'll go to Steve in Milwaukee now. Steve, what trip did you want to tell us about?
Well, I think it has to be my 1948 road trip with my parents in a brand new 1948 Chevrolet four-door.
Where'd you go?
We took Highway 18, the main road at the time, all the way out to the Dakotas. We visited Rushmore, Yellowstone. In fact, I'm looking at a window sticker from Reptile Gardens in Rapid City, South Dakota, as we speak.
Fantastic. And was it a comfortable trip, Steve? Plenty of places to stop for a food and gas?
Interesting. We would stop every night, of course. And at that time, the motels had separate little cabins.
Oh, yeah.
And we would stop at a place. My mother would go in and check out the cabin to see if it was clean enough. And if it was good, we took it. And if it wasn't, we went down the road.
Steve, thank you so much for sharing that. Wow, that sounds like a great epic road trip. I love it. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Gordon joins us now in Eagle River. Gordon, hi.
Hello there.
Hi, where do you like to go?
Well, Actually, we're new to Eagle River. We've camped here for years, but when we get a week off or more, then we'd go to the UP and camp at campgrounds along the Lake Superior shore in Michigan.
What time of year do you usually go there, Gordon?
Oh, usually after Labor Day.
Okay, and that's when Lake Superior is as warm as it's going to get. Do you spend time in the water?
Not very much.
See, I used to go up in August and get in there, and the secret is it's not so painful once your extremities go numb, and then you could spend, like, hours in the water.
I can't believe the way people swim and enjoy it the way they do. So,
Gordon, and are you going to head up there this year?
I think we got a few days scheduled. Yeah, we have a travel trailer. We haul along and get away from things and enjoy the Lake Superior shore. It's an inland sea, so we enjoy the sunsets. And when I get to see the freighters out on the water, I enjoy that too. So
fantastic. I'm feeling jealous. I don't have a trip planned up there, and it's been a while. Gordon, thank you so much for sharing that. We got an email from Trent in Appleton who says, for many years, his family's been traveling from the Fox Valley area up to Hayward, Wisconsin, for the Lumberjack World Championships. Over the years, they developed friendships with some of the competitors and others that make the same trek every year. He says it inspired his son to start log rolling, and he's taken that up as a sport. And, oh, this is awesome. And he competes as an amateur at the World Championships and other competitions throughout the state. That's cool. I mean, we got to get in touch and talk about that, the log rollers of the future. Back to your calls now. David is with us in Green Bay. David, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your story, David?
So we would go to South Dakota an awful lot because my parents, my dad's parents lived out there. And so there'd be a couple of days driving like every summer a couple of times. And dad used to strap in a TV between the front two seats so that my sister and I could watch in the back. And our favorite movie to watch on the trip was Babe, like that kids movie about that pig. And we loved Babe because we thought it was a magic movie, because we thought it changed every time we watched it. So we never knew which plot, like what would happen on that trip. It wasn't until years and years later when I realized we thought it would change because we'd just fall asleep on the road trip at different times. So we'd always wake up to a different part of the Babe movie. And so we had no idea what happened the whole time.
That's fantastic. And I'm trying to picture this. This is like with a little TV with a VHS player in it or what?
Yeah, exactly. He would bungee cord it between his chair and mom's chair in the front, like right under the armrest. Sometimes you'd have to take the armrests off to fit it in. But yeah, we just it was great. Those are some of my best memories.
That is fantastic. Thanks so much for sharing that with us, David. I love the and probably they dreamed, right? They completed the movie in their dreams in different ways, and there are different twists and permutations. I love it. Still time for you to call in with your road trip story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Our own Susanna Michaels from the WPR fundraising team says, I don't love driving. In fact, I actively don't like it. But twice, Susanna says, I've driven to my family in Connecticut. Each time I stopped at a beautiful campground in Pennsylvania called Promised Land State Park. Doing that by myself, getting up to swim in the lake in the morning made me feel like I was really living life and made me feel competent. Awesome, Susanna. Thanks for that. We got an email from Andy who says his favorite road trip was his first big one. In 1996, he and his future wife took a 1994 Honda two-door hatchback loaded with camping gear and food out to Yellowstone and back in 1 week. He said every day was a new adventure and just the start of a lifetime of traveling with his wife and kids. I love everybody seems to remember exactly the car they had on these road trips. This is fantastic. We heard from Chris Deering, WPR business sponsorship manager, says in 1996, my girlfriend's older brother relocated from Ohio to San Diego, asked us if we wanted to drive their beloved Toyota pickup truck out for them. We jumped at the chance. Neither of us had been out west, so we drove for 20 hours straight. So we got to the Front Range in Colorado. And I've done that and spent the next 2 weeks making our way through some of the most amazing landscapes imaginable. And the list includes here, let's see, Red Rocks, Garden of the Gods, Mesa Verde, Arches National Park, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Sedona, Arizona all stand out. Favorite memory, sleeping under about a million stars in Taos, New Mexico. We thought we were seeing what was actually the Milky Way galaxy. Oh, they saw that. Mind-blowing to a city kid that was used to seeing the Big Dipper and a few other stars on a good night. Wow. A lot of inspiring road trip stories. That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. Still time for you to call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Kim is with us now in Germantown. Kim, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What kind of road trips do you do?
Well, I've done quite a few road trips to get to something called the PGI Convention. It's the pyrotechnic, I don't even know what all it stands for, but it's...
Sounds like fireworks to me.
Make fireworks. Yeah, they make fireworks, they sell fireworks, they do the displays. They have an annual conference every year where they are the most spectacular fireworks you will ever see in your life.
So hang on, Kim. This is where, if I'm a fireworks artist, this is where I go and I'm trying to impress all the other fireworks artists?
Yes, exactly. These are people that make them every year. They show new fireworks that they invented that year. And I have gone all over to see these. They're so spectacular. I did them one year to Pennsylvania. I've done them to Iowa a few years. And one year we went up to Wyoming, my girlfriend and I, so we did the whole Yellowstone and all the sites along the way. And that one was actually funny because we drove all the way out there, and when we got there, it was too windy, and
they
couldn't even display them all. Oh, and one time I went to Michigan to see them, and there was a huge lightning storm the night before, which took out many of the fireworks, because they're set up for the whole week and they blow them all off.
But oh, wow.
To your listeners, it is in Wisconsin this year.
Whereabouts?
I think it's in Oshkosh. It's either in Oshkosh or Appleton, but they are the most phenomenal fireworks you will ever see in your life, because you're exactly right. It's people in that industry trying to impress each other.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that call. Thanks to everybody who called in and shared road trip experiences, and your plans are hitting the road again this summer. Happy travels if you've got a trip in the works. Coming up, a former doctor turned journalist tells us why health insurance claims are being rejected at a higher rate. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, so do you like literally cringe when someone uses a word or phrase improperly? Our guest makes the case for the good in bad English. Now, a recent study by the Kaiser Family Foundation found that health insurance providers are rejecting claims at a higher rate in recent years than they used to. Patients can appeal those denials, but many don't know how or even that they can, or they don't have the time and energy to work through what can be a complicated, drawn-out process. Under the Affordable Care Act, the Department of Health and Human Services is supposed to provide government oversight for health insurance denials. But health coverage experts say the system hasn't gotten as much attention as it should. As a result, many patients have been left with expensive medical bills for health care that they thought would be covered by their insurance. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has that happened to you? Have you or a loved one dealt with a health insurance claim being denied? You can share your story. What kind of explanation were you given? Did you try to appeal that decision? Was that successful? What questions do you have about how this system has changed over time? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Elizabeth Rosenthal is a senior contributing editor for KFF Health News and previously practiced medicine in New York. She's the author of the book, An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. She wrote a recent opinion column for The Washington Post called Denials of Health Insurance Claims Are Rising and Getting Weirder. Elizabeth, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you talk, first of all, about this apparent increase in the number of rejected health insurance claims? How big is the scope of this?
Well, the problem is we really don't know, because the Affordable Care Act tasked the government to track denials, and they really haven't done so. They've only done so in a small subset of plans. And in that small subset, these are just the plans that reported under the that are covered by the Obamacare marketplace. We see an average of 17% denials, but some plans denied 49%, and one plan in 2020 denied 80% of claims. So, you know, that's quite alarming. I mean, when I was practicing, the denials practice was in place in the 90s, but it was really used to deny or to vet really, really expensive treatments, like where doctors and hospitals doing stuff just to make money, right? Rather than, and for the patient good, instead of for the patient good. Now it's trickled down to like everything and anything. And, you know, the as I said before, the government was supposed to track this because the big fear when the Affordable Care Act was passed, I don't know if we remember this, but before the ACA, it was legal for insurers to deny people insurance with pre-existing conditions. That was called cherry picking, and that was kind of to assure they had the most optimal income. And the worry was, well, if you can't cherry pick your patients who you're going to cover, maybe you'll just deny a lot more care. That's another way to make money. So for that very reason, the authors of the Affordable Care Act said, you need to track these denials. There has to be oversight. And that just hasn't been done. So here we are, you know, with this familiar experience of getting what you think is routine care and bingo, not covered.
Now, I picture this process as like, okay, the claim goes to the insurer and a person sits down and carefully reviews the claim and looks and compares it to the standards and, you know, goes through this process. As you write, there might be an algorithm. A human might look at this thing for 1.2 seconds, if I read this right. Could you talk about what has changed in this process?
If that, I mean, a lot of it, you know, in the 90s, when this was rare, the concept was a qualified healthcare provider would look at a claim to see if that kind of treatment was really warranted in a patient's care, particularly for very expensive things. It was rare, and it was meted out very carefully. Now, what's happened, of course, since the 90s is there's automation, right? So there's automated claims denial. Like you said, often we see that at some insurers, the ProPublica investigation found that that claims were being processed like at 1.2 seconds, right? Which means that the process, if there's a human processor, they're not looking at the chart, right? A computer is just looking for, are there certain words in the claim that justify this medicine or this procedure? And even worse, I think the thing that disturbs me the most is now often claims are denied not because it's not the right treatment for the patient, but because your insurer may not have a contract with that particular drug manufacturer or device manufacturer. So what we see now, and we've all had this experience, is you go to the pharmacy counter for something you've been taking for years, right? An asthma inhaler, a medicine for type 2 diabetes, and you're suddenly told, no, your plan isn't covering that. That's not because it's not good for you. It's because your plan has changed contracts with the drug manufacturer and they want to change you to something different. It may be something different that's in theory equally as good. It may be a generic equivalent, but or it may be just a different generic. But like if you've spent the last couple of years doing well on a certain kind of insulin or with a certain kind of asthma inhaler, you really don't want to switch, right? It's not good medicine.
One more point you wrote about before we go to our callers is often the explanations given to patients are more or less, when doctors look at them, gibberish. They don't make a lot of human sense. What's happening?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of boilerplate language in all the denials. I mean, my favorite quote in the story was Deirdre O'Reilly, who's a physician at the University of Vermont. Her son, who had an anaphylactic reaction, went to an emergency room. His life was saved. He was given life-saving treatment with epinephrine and steroids. And the claim was denied. And she was like, whoa, wait a second. That's not right. And she said the denials were almost impossible to appeal because she said it was just gobbledygook. It's, you know, sometimes it's not medically necessary. Sometimes it doesn't meet the right condition. Sometimes it's pages and pages of just kind of boilerplate paragraphs. And it doesn't give you enough information to even say, wait, even if you're a physician, wait, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Talking to Elizabeth Rosenthal with KFF Health News about a piece you wrote in the Washington Post about an increase, at least to the extent we could tell from the data out there, in the number of rejections by health insurance providers. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions or your experiences. Lisa is with us now in Madison. Lisa, what did you want to tell us about?
Hi. So recently we received letters, my daughter and I, for services we had, and we were informed by the hospital and clinic that they were appealing a claim that we didn't even know hadn't been denied. So I'm wondering if hospitals and clinics are hiring people because if somebody can't pay it, then it goes to bankruptcy and they're recouping less money.
Interesting. Elizabeth, is this something just hitting the patients themselves or, as Lisa says, hospitals and clinics too?
Well, hospitals and clinics too, and they will frequently, if you're lucky, instead of just saying we're going to bill you, they will appeal, do at least a first pass try at appealing the denial. And maybe the insurer has said not medically necessary, and the hospital or clinic has looked at the chart and said, oh, we're going to give a little more information about the case in an appeal that's specific to the case to justify it. Because you're right, they would way prefer to get the full payment from the insurer than, or at least in most cases, hopefully to go after the patient or to recoup it in collections where they get pennies on the dollar. But so, you know, one strategy is to ask your provider's help in an appeal because, you know, mere mortals look at these denials and like go, well, why? What? I don't understand. My doctor told me this was necessary. Why isn't it being paid for?
Thanks a lot for that call, Lisa. Let's talk about that appeal process and the review process. If I go get healthcare, I think it's going to be covered. I get that notice it's not covered. What can I as a patient do?
Well, you can appeal, obviously, and just try. I mean, the problem is this takes so much time and energy, and not everyone has it, right? I will tell you, a friend of mine whose husband had a hip injury, clearly needs to get an MRI. Their insurer, it was scheduled for a Friday. The insurer denied it. These are healthcare people. They appealed the claim. But, you know, claims appeals, they can take weeks, right? And people are suffering in the meantime. So, you know, yes, you can appeal. Probably better to ask your provider's help in appealing if you don't understand why it was rejected. Because sometimes it's just the healthcare provider didn't provide enough information. But sometimes the causes are mysterious. And the thing that's really disturbing, the most disturbing thing to me in that KFF survey is that only 1 in 500 people appealed their claims. I mean, that's shocking. So I think the hope from the insurers, frankly, is that a lot of people just go away. Or maybe, you know, if they tell you at the pharmacy counter, oh, your insurer isn't covering this. If it's a small dollar amount, fine. You'll put out the $20 or the $40. But, you know, sometimes the bills are in the tens or hundreds of thousands, and that's not really an option.
We're talking to KFF Health News senior contributing editor Elizabeth Rosenthal about a rise in health insurance claims being denied and a lack of oversight in the process. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about health insurance claims and rejections? Do you work in a healthcare-related field? Do you have experience dealing with insurance providers? Are there changes you'd like to see in the system? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, hear from more of you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Elizabeth Rosenthal, senior contributing editor of KFF Health News. She's with us today to discuss why health insurance companies appear to be denying more claims and what we can do about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your own experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Diane joins us now in Iron County. Diane, hi.
Hi. I went for my annual physical in February, and I had the same test done as the year before, and I had asked them to make sure everything was covered because I have been denied things, and comes out that I ended up getting a bill for more than half of the blood tests because they said they were no longer covering them, and I didn't need the test in the first place. I've always, whatever scored, had good results on all of these things anyhow. And then they told me that next year I have to ask what they're going to do before I get there. And I'm like, how do I know what to ask?
Diane, thanks for sharing that. So the expectation, it sounds like, from the insurance company is that Diane keep up with their changes in coverage, pre-screen what she's going to be screened for. A lot on the patient there, Elizabeth.
Yeah, it's so unfair to patients that every year, because it changes year to year, sometimes month to month. And how is a mere mortal supposed to know? And who has the time to do that? You know, under the ACA, an annual physical is supposed to be covered. Well, what does that include? That depends a bit on your insurer. And they change, like it's a moving target. And it's just so unfair to patients to expect them to ask. And it's really unfair to the providers as well to have to check, oh, this year can I order magnesium, or this year can I order an iron test. It's a whole frustrating system where that wastes everyone's time. And this is what gets to me most. You know, the patients waste their time. They spend money they shouldn't have to spend. The doctor's offices have to hire people to argue these bills with the insurers. The insurers hire people to argue back. And all that money and all that time should just be going to our health. And it's not. It's just a national tragedy to me that this happens.
Well,
and I'm sorry to the caller.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that experience with us. Sorry that happened. John is with us now in Lake Halley. John, hello.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I had an experience a few years ago where I had a knee surgery. While I was unconscious, they brought in a secondary surgeon to help with the surgery, but the second surgeon wasn't covered under my insurance. So when I appealed, they just said, well, you still got to pay for it.
John, wow. Okay. So Elizabeth, yeah, literally the patient is unconscious, obviously can't help with the decision of whether to get this second surgeon in on the operation. Is that something that's common where, I guess, extra help in a procedure is rejected?
I will say it's a kind of scammy kind of thing I've heard of before. Now, the good thing, but it won't help the caller, is that that kind of thing is supposed to be illegal now under the No Surprises Act, because that is when you go to an in-network facility, you've chosen an in-network surgeon, and they call in someone that's out of your network. That's a surprise out-of-network bill. In theory, that is illegal now. Once again, the problem is to recoup your money or not have to pay that bill. It takes a lot of time and effort to argue it often. So, I say the patient is always left holding the bag, and that's just so wrong. I don't know what the outcome was, but, it's like holding patients hostage.
John, thanks for the call. Barbara is with us now in Madison. Barbara, hello.
Hello.
Hi, yeah. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm a retired nurse and nurse anesthetist. I have had to contact insurance companies over the years for my patients because they were denied things that were necessary. But a few years ago, my sister's daughter-in-law had a baby. She's a very tiny little girl, and she had a very big baby, and she had a huge abdominal hernia.
Go ahead, Barbara.
The insurance company immediately said, that's cosmetic, we reject it. So they talked to me, and her father-in-law happens to be an attorney, which probably helped. But we recommended she get another opinion from a surgeon, saying that this is necessary and that she should take pictures of this because it was unbelievable. She looked like she was still 9 months pregnant. And that she document how it impacted her quality of life. She couldn't pick up her baby. She couldn't carry clothes to the laundry. And they finally came around and paid. But I think the people who review these don't have medical knowledge.
Interesting, Barbara. Thanks for the call. And Elizabeth, not everybody has a sister-in-law who's a nurse and a father who's an attorney to advocate for them.
Yeah, and that's kind of the dream team you need to fight these effectively often, unfortunately. And I think, you know, you're seeing here just the kind of persistence it takes. And when the caller talks about people not being qualified, well, you know, the first pass may well be a machine. The second pass may well be, you know, if you're lucky, someone with a bit of medical training looking for certain keywords that would justify payment. Then if you appeal again, you may get a physician, a generalist. But if, you know, my neurologist has had to ask for a peer-to-peer with a neurologist. So you work your way up the denial tree, and it's exhausting, and it wastes everyone's time, and it takes away from the time that physicians and nurses spend with patients. And that's the thing that's so damaging in the end.
Barbara, thanks again for that call. Elizabeth, I want to start looking toward solutions. Now, last week, the House Committee on Energy and Commerce sent a letter to the insurance company Cigna saying, hey, give us some information about your automated system you're using to deny health insurance claims, based in part on some of the recent reporting you talk about in your piece. Are you optimistic that we could start to see more oversight over these decision processes?
Well, I hope so. I was disappointed. You know, I tried to get a comment from the Department of Health and Human Services, which is tasked with collecting the data, and didn't get a response. I mean, it is their legal obligation. The ACA says shall collect this data. And if they see a plan that's denying 50% of claims, you know, you would hope there would be some sanctions. And the problem now, more than 10 years after the passage of the ACA, is we don't have that information. I mean, even when you're shopping for plans, who would choose a plan that denied 50% of claims, right? We deserve that information, and there deserves to be oversight. So there is, unlike many things in government, there is the power to do this, whether there's the money and the will. You know, it's sad, but I think we're reaching a tipping point now where patients and providers are just so frustrated. It's so unfair, and it's wasting everyone's time, and it's taking patients' money, and it's just not right.
Time for one more caller. Jane is with us in Madison. Jane, hi.
Hi. My husband's been going to Mayo Clinic for the past 10 years to get a C11 choline PET scan, which is the only place in the United States that uses the scan to diagnose stage 4 prostate cancer. We've been going for the past 10 years. Medicare has picked it up. We have now, last year, switched to a Medicare Advantage plan, United Healthcare, and we were told when we made the appointment to go this month to Mayo Clinic for the same scan we've been getting for the past 10 years that they denied the claim, United Healthcare did, and we'd have to come with $16,000 or they wouldn't give us the scan. So I called Medicare. They said, yes, indeed, we do cover this, but United Healthcare, whatever type of, we're not staying with them when we have open enrollment, but they've denied it. They won't even go to Medicare first because of whatever structure they have. And we're stuck now with standard scans, which are nowhere as accurate in terms of getting in front of early detection for prostate cancer. So,
Jane, I gotcha. We don't have much time left. Elizabeth, I don't know if that's some of the available data, Medicare Advantage providers compared to Medicare coverage. Do we know their rates of denial claims?
No, we don't. And we should, because, you know, Medicare Advantage plans have networks that are narrower. They have different criteria for coverage. Traditional Medicare generally covers things very generous. I mean, the payments may not be generous, but it covers a wide array of treatments. So you do have to be very careful if you choose to go Medicare Advantage or any narrow network plan. But again, not fair to the patient. Suddenly you're changing the rules of the game 1 year to the next. And how is a patient supposed to know that? It's really hard.
Jane, thanks for that call. And Elizabeth, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Sorry.
That's Elizabeth Rosenthal, senior contributing editor for KFF Health News, with us today for a look at rising rates of health coverage denials by many insurance companies. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, if you want to clean your house but cut back on chemicals, Kate's guest has advice for you on how to make your own homemade cleaning products. Join the conversation tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. You know what's scary? One Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know what's even scarier? 1.7 billion T-Rexes. As reported in Live Science, research in the journal Paleontology tried to figure out how many T-Rexes ever existed. It's kind of tricky, it turns out. They were around a long time and a long time ago. Scientists used the best info about the times and places the species was around, their breeding habits and egg-laying rates, what their habitats could support, that kind of stuff. They came up with the 1.7 billion number that covers a time span of 2.5 million years, ending about 65 million years ago. 1.7 billion sounds like a lot. A previous estimate was even higher at 2.5 billion. As I learned from that documentary Jurassic Park, just one T-Rex can cause a lot of trouble. Good news, most of us will just encounter one T-Rex in musical form. This is Central Time.